thank you so much for staying with the program this morning. I think we want to be able to stay on time and get everyone back to their offices by 12:15. My name is Amy Liu, and I am the co-director and senior fellow of the Metropolitan Policy Program here at the Brookings Institution. We have had such a dynamic discussion this morning. I am really honored to be hosting this conversation with federal leaders who are absolutely the face of and the champions for our national ambitions for global trade and economic competitiveness. We do have one change in lineup, but why don't I go ahead and start and introduce our panelists, and I believe one is on his way now. First of all, next to me is Chairman Fred Hochberg, Chairman and President of the Export-Import Bank. And it is a real pleasure to have Chairman Hochberg back, as he was part of our program last year when we first launched our initial findings on Export Nation. Next to him is Dario Gomez. Dario is the Associate Administrator for International Trade at the Small Business Administration. Prior to the administration, worked for the mayor of Los Angeles, so in many respects, very much understands what it means to localize the National Export Initiative to metropolitan areas. We are really pleased to have Dario here today, and I know that Administrator Mills sends her regrets. We should be joined shortly by Undersecretary Sanchez of the Department of Commerce. In fact, just in time.
This guy knows how to make an entrance.
How are you doing? Good to see you.
How are you?
Hello. Thank you so much for coming. While he gets settled, I just want to say that we are really privileged to have Undersecretary Sanchez join us today. He, in fact, literally just got off a plane from Japan and Vietnam. And I know with such not only the time change and the long flight, we give you absolute excuse today if you drop a couple nouns and verbs in your sentences today.
I just want to say it's really great to be in Tokyo.
And I did also want to mention in full disclosure, and I think Bruce mentioned this in his remarks this morning, is that we do, the Brookings Metropolitan Policy Program has a formal collaboration with ITA and the members of the TPCC, which is the Trade Policy Coordinating Committee, on how we can be, again, learning from each other and on better aligning the National Export Initiative to the Metropolitan Export Initiative. So welcome, all three of you, to this discussion today. I want to try to bring you up to speed on what we have talked about this morning, too, Undersecretary. But, next week is the second anniversary of the National Export Initiative. And this administration has outlined a number of strategies for how they plan to achieve their goal of doubling exports over the next 5 years. In the National Export Strategy, there is an explicit commitment to, quote, I think everyone here uses the phrase, to, quote, localize the NEI. So I want to use this panel, this discussion today, to talk about what that means to localize the National Export Initiative, from helping regional leaders both build the pipeline of small and mid-sized exporters, which we heard a lot about today, to maximizing the global playing field, and then coming back directly to how do we support metropolitan areas as they undertake export strategies. So what I want to do first is start with a question with Chairman Hochberg. I think one of the things that Brookings has learned a lot with our regional leaders over the past year is that in order for us to really increase the goal of boosting exports and really helping our economy benefit from global trade, we need to ultimately increase the number of small and mid-sized exporters that are participating in exports. And as Ex-Im Bank is the key export credit agency for the U.S., I wanted to ask Chairman Hochberg, what exactly is the Ex-Im Bank doing in particular to help small and mid-sized companies? Because I think there is a perception that Ex-Im Bank supports mostly large companies with the profit margins and collateral to be more export-ready firms, if you will. What, and particularly in the last year, has Ex-Im Bank done to really support small and mid-sized companies in this way?
Well, thank you, Amy, and thank you, Bruce, for this great work you do at the Metropolitan Project. And we actually, just a quick comment, we actually use this data very much, and we've talked later, but we're actually opening some new offices, and the prime data inputs was the work done here at Brookings. So thank you for making us more effective. Last year in January, with my new best friend, Tom Donahue, at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, we launched something called Global Access for Small Business. And the thinking behind that was that small business in particular have a much tougher time of understanding how to get into foreign markets. My good friend Francisco in the Commerce Department does a great job of bringing companies on trade missions because they need someone to kind of show them the way the first time as well as their goal key services. But we've organized these forums. We've done 34 of them in 2011. So we've done better than almost three a month. I'm actually flying to Rochester tomorrow morning to do one with Congresswoman Louise Slaughter, and did one just last week in Greensboro, North Carolina. So these are quick seminars we run. It's a half-day program. We have someone from Ex-Im, SBA, and the Commerce Department there to talk about exactly how the three of us can help small businesses. We usually bring in three or four small companies that talk about their experience so people get firsthand experience that way. And then we have representatives from our respective agencies available for one-on-one free counseling all afternoon, and it sometimes goes to 2, 3, 4 o'clock until people's questions are answered. So one is communication, but two, we've also created a number of new products. I mentioned we were talking earlier this morning, Amy and I, and we launched a new product called Global Credit Express. That is a direct loan program that the Ex-Im Bank is doing up to $500,000. These are actually direct loans from the federal government. It's very hard to get banks to be making small-scale loans like that. So these are working capital loans for exporters who need the capital so that they can buy inventory and finance the receivables. So that's one particular one. Another quick one is supply chain finance. If you're particularly a small business, but not necessarily, and you're selling goods that are inputs to a larger exporter, we can help you with the supply chain finance program that we've already launched with Caterpillar, Case New Holland, Boeing, and as of 2 hours ago, Navistar. We approved them this morning. So if you're supplying inputs to their exports, instead of waiting 30 or 60 days to get paid, you can get paid in less than 5 days. And that really creates liquidity for small businesses. So it's both communication outreach and specific financial products. And just to close, it is a misnomer. 85% of the customers we help are small businesses. Yes, Boeing and GE get a lot of the headlines, but 85% of the actual work, it's about 20% of the dollars. The average transaction is about $1 million, $1.5 million. We've done as small as $5,000 and as large as $3 billion. So if anybody in the room can't fit between $5,000 and $3 billion, come talk to me. We'll break new ground. But generally, that fits. Most audiences I talk to can fit between $5,000 and $3 billion. So that's been our basic program. We did about $6 billion last year in small businesses.
That's great. Let me now turn to Dario.
Yes.
What along the same line, what exactly has, in the past year or two, has SBA has entered into international trade really more aggressively in this past year or two under NEI? What are the key milestones you've achieved in the last year to support small and mid-sized companies? And how does the SBA programs supplement what Ex-Im Bank does in particular?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you, Bruce, and thank you, Amy, for inviting SBA. And on behalf of Karen Mills, I want to send her regrets as well. It's fantastic to be here, having been a former local person and knowing the challenges that Carlos and the mayor have mentioned before at the local level. I would say there's definitely three things that SBA has done to sort of elevate in international trade. Congress passed a law that created the Office of the Office of International Trade and created my position of Associate Administrator. And it gave us new tools as well that will help small businesses. The first area is STEP. I think we've heard many of people talk about how we've distributed $30 million in grants to all the states and territories that are eligible. Last year, we had 47 states, four territories, and the District of Columbia. We've started, started to get some of the progress reports from STEP, and I'm proud to say that a number of states are already taking trade missions with the Department of Commerce. They're taking advantage of EXIM loans as well as SBA loans and have started to see some actual sales and estimated sales that are really promising. The second area is that we increased the cap on two of our loan programs and made one of them permanent. We have an international trade loan that was increased from $2 million to $5 million and an export working capital loan that complements what EXIM does from $2 million to $5 million as well. And it made permanent our Export Express program, which is fantastic. It's $500,000 guaranteed at 75%. And this is a great product for a new-to-export company to take advantage of a new line of capital to pay for a Gold Key trade mission, trade shows that the Department of Commerce is doing, and marketing abroad. I think those three areas, those three loans alone, have been fantastic. The last area I'd say is that we are also training and certifying a number of our Small Business Development Center counselors. We have 950 SBDC centers around the country. Many of you are familiar with them. 4,000 counselors. Our program there is to get them to a level of competence so that we can have ongoing counseling and training for that new-to-export company. And I know in the report you mentioned that you need case managers. That's exactly what we have in mind. If we're going to increase the number of small businesses exporting, we really need to increase our multipliers as well. And that's an area that we're deeply focusing on.
Great, great. That's really helpful. I'm going to turn to Undersecretary Sanchez. One of the discussions we had this morning is how do we use limited resources in this? How do we prioritize industries and prioritize markets at a time of very limited resources? It's certainly one of the hallmarks of each of these plans is that even though each of the four plans have goals to double exports, they need to prioritize their resources around how to get there. My understanding is the administration, ITA in particular, also doing the same thing. Please explain to us what are your priority targets and priority industries. How did you arrive at those? And, well, why don't we start with that?
Great.
And I'll have a follow-up.
Well, first of all, Amy, thank you for having me here. Bruce, thank you. And Brookings, not only for inviting ITA to be a part of this, but more importantly for the partnership that we have with you. We believe it's one of the most critical things we're doing to make sure that the NEI is successful, meaning we double exports, and that there's a continued life for the NEI, or I guess the new NEI after December 2014. To your specific question, we embarked on a process now about 18 months ago, we started, on developing strategic plans for key markets and key sectors. And we did this with an eye, short-term goal of achieving the president's NEI objectives of doubling exports by 2014, but also looking beyond that, where do we want to be in particular markets and what sectors can help us get there in those markets. And we pulled data together from, well, certainly from think tanks around here, from different groups that we regularly rely on for information, from our network. We have offices in 75 countries around the world with trade specialists there. They provide information, talking with our colleagues. And from all that information, we focused on those markets that have the greatest potential and often the greatest challenge. So it will not be any surprise that included in our emerging markets are China, Brazil, India. But in addition to those, and Russia, in addition to the BRIC countries, we have Vietnam, Indonesia, the Gulf state countries, Turkey. These are all countries that are showing great potential. In some cases, we're already seeing huge jumps in exports, and we project even larger increases in the years to come. So we've identified roughly about a dozen markets. And then we looked at sectors. Overall, what are the sectors that are showing great growth? And then we crossed the markets we identified with the sectors that show the best promise in those particular markets. And we developed plans. We developed plans that have two focuses. One is export promotion, and we tend to identify those sectors which some that fall into a multiple markets include aerospace, chemicals, high technology, healthcare, medical devices, infrastructure generally, energy, both traditional oil and gas as well as alternative energy. So we've continued to do this. Now, as we look ahead to make sure we're working closely with our local partners, a lot of these markets are going to make a lot of sense, and we will work with our partners to help them get into these markets. But a lot of our local partners will also want to go into mature markets, markets that are not necessarily targeted but are still huge opportunities like Mexico and Canada. So while we may not identify those as the sexy emerging markets, they still provide huge potential, particularly for small and medium-sized companies. We're also working on the trade policy front. So short-term, export promotion gets us a big bang for our buck. So we'll do a lot of trade missions. I think something that's important to point out here is the kind of collaboration that we're doing now at the federal level, as never before, with FRED and EXIM. Before we go on any trade mission now, and I have to give credit to Fred, this was his idea and we executed on it, we do a webinar so that every member of that trade mission can know what EXIM Bank can do for them. May not seem like a big deal, but you'd be amazed how we really haven't, over the years, done as good a job as we should in getting the information out that's available. We do that now. Dario talked about empowering his team, network of business experts, small business experts. We've partnered with the SBA in a very important way. Instead of trying to be all things to all people, the International Trade Administration is going to focus on those companies that are export ready. But we don't want to lose those companies that have never exported but want to, because we need to increase that number. Only 1% of American companies export, 1%. So the work that SBA is doing is critical. What we've done now is when we get companies that are completely new to export, we turn them over to SBA. SBA works with them through their local business associates, and when they become export ready, they come to us. They may use one of our personalized services. They may take a trade mission. They may simply just get market information and go forward. So I've kind of gone beyond the question, but I wanted to tie in that I think that we're targeting markets, targeting sectors, and working much closer together than ever before.
And that's great, and I know that Chairman Hochberg, you also talk about that, these priority markets. I do think it's really important for us to hear about the alignment. Do you share the same priority targets and industries? Are they the same?
No.
But for good reason.
For good reason. Let me.
Really?
We're not just being difficult. We really, when it comes to countries, we target those countries where our financing can make a real difference.
So
that may not always be the same countries that are targeted for exports. Secondly, we also, in a product category...
Can you elaborate on that?
Would
they be different?
Well, for example, China's a large market, but frankly, our financing doesn't make a big difference there. Canada's our largest trading partner, but our finance is not generally that essential to making a transaction or a sale in Canada. So we've created about 9 countries that we've identified that are growing rapidly, have a large need for infrastructure, and where our financing makes a difference. And part of the reason for infrastructure is also at EXIM Bank, and it does differ from SBA, and it's why the President's plan about having a more integrated agency will make sense, that'll do a better job of integrating these different proposals. But we're focused on high U.S. content because we're really about creating jobs. So 85% of the content of an export for us to finance it needs to be American-made. So we looked at those product categories that have a high U.S. content and those countries that are looking to buy those products. So when you do that matrix, that creates somewhat different. There's a lot of overlap, but there are a few that we don't overlap as well. And then on the other hand, Francisco, Undersecretary Sanchez, has identified Saudi Arabia and the Middle East as a strong market. We originally had not focused on that. We are now refocusing on that because the work he's been doing there is actually, we've seen that to be a very fruitful market.
So why don't you elaborate? What are the 9 countries?
9 countries.
And then
I think we
industries
pass out,
and the U.S., the ones with a high U.S. content.
Let me do that. The 9 countries that start in this hemisphere, Mexico, Colombia, and Brazil.
Yep.
Moving around the world, Turkey, Nigeria, South Africa, and continuing again, India, Vietnam, and Indonesia.
Okay.
I would say we if we were going to add a tenth, we're looking at Saudi Arabia and the Emirates have been very strong, particularly for power equipment, which we are one of the world leaders in. And we've actually seen a surprising uptick in financing to China in the last 6 months, where, oddly, China was the largest area of our portfolio in 1998 to 2000, 2001, and now it's not even in the top 10. So we're just going to see. Sometime we have to see in different markets where our financing is more essential than in others. And product categories, quickly, is avionics, airplanes, airplane equipment, farm equipment, construction equipment, medical, power equipment, renewable, conventional, are very strong. And satellites have turned out to be a very strong category.
Oh, interesting. Great. Let me ask you one more question on the global playing field, and then we're going to switch over to just direct alignment to metro exports. And then we're going to open up to questions in about 7 minutes, so start thinking about them now. I think one of the rare moments of administration and congressional alignment this year was on the free trade agreements. And in the passage of the free trade agreement on Panama, Colombia, and Korea. And in fact, I believe the Korea Free Trade Agreement goes into effect next week.
Yes.
So why don't you explain to this group then, how will the regional leaders in metro areas who are interested in undertaking export strategies, the companies in them, how will they begin to see the benefit of that free trade agreement? We'll start with Sanchez.
Well, let me just say at the outset, you're right. This is one area where there has been almost complete agreement with the administration and the Congress, and for good reason. Next week, when the Korea Free Trade Agreement takes effect, it will start a process that we will see upwards to $11 billion in new exports go to Korea. And some things that, for me, are somewhat surprising. For example, Toyota, Japanese manufacturer, this year will export from the United States, from plants where they manufacture in the United States, 125,000 units. And a bunch of those will go to Korea, which I just, every time I say that, I just puts a smile on my face. But beyond automobiles, next week, March 15th, 80% of all exportable goods will see duties go to zero. So a whole range of products. And the remaining almost all will go to zero within 5 years. There are a few exceptions that may take a little longer. But 80% go down immediately, and then another 20% will take several years to go. So this is a huge opportunity in a wide range of sectors. ITA, as well as through our interagency process, are putting together a coordinated plan to really help businesses take full advantage of this. One of the things we're doing is we have a website set up that provides information on all those products that go duty-free immediately, those that may take some time, so it sees how it impacts particular sectors. We're planning trade missions. We're planning webinars. We're looking at ways to get information out there and coordinating with SBA and XM, among other agencies.
Great. Do you want to add to that?
I was going to add one other thing I thought about. Francisco mentioned the webinars, and Carlos mentioned about people going overseas. We also try and do that to make sure that they understand the financing tools that are part of it. We also have 65 city-state partners around the country, and I'm actually actively recruiting more because it's in those city-state partners, and sometimes it's at the municipal level, and sometimes it might be at the state level, and it varies around the country. But that becomes a very important tool to execute on this, on the free trade agreements. Of the three countries, we have the greatest focus actually on Colombia, just in terms of what they're purchasing and what we're on our financing. We have been active in Korea, but at a much lower level. Our activity so far in Panama has been really in Boeing aircraft, though I was just down in Panama over the summer and talking about a number of projects actually in the downtown Panama City, one is being a new metro and some new power plants. So those are, but infrastructure tends to be a large area for where we do a lot of that work, and Columbia is prime for that.
Right, great.
And on that note, I just want to say that having lived in Los Angeles for a number of years, which has the largest Korean population, I think that we can see a lot of synergy there, not only in exports and our trade, but investment as well. And I know that the Select USA program is really looking at inbound investment. So I think that's a good sign that the FTA provides. From the SBA point of view, we look to take advantage of a lot of the number of Korean American small businesses that are out there, not only in the counseling but in our loan program. Just from firsthand experience in Los Angeles, there's a number of Korean American banks that are also our preferred lender program. So we look to do more recruitment there. And about 15% of our export working capital loans currently go to Korea nationwide. So we look to that volume to go up considerably as well. But I think that's a great thing, though, because this is a good partnership between both countries, and I think that we'll see it both in trade and in investment as well.
Great. Let me ask you one final question before we go to Q&A about supporting metro export strategies in particular. Each of the four plans that were featured today, or the four metros that were featured today, have, and by the way, if you haven't, for those in the audience, there are summaries of each of those plans out in the back. You have not received, picked those up yet. But each of the plans have goals of doubling exports in the next 5 years. I think one of their major contributions to that is the desire to increase the pipeline of quality small, mid-sized exporters into exporting. And not only in addition to these four, there is potential increased activity in other cities and metropolitan areas. Bruce talked about this morning the fact that the U.S. Conference of Mayors have issued a challenge to up to 25 other metropolitan areas to adopt similar proactive, intentional metropolitan export strategies to, again, help more of our U.S. companies take advantage of increased global demand. If all of these markets are successful, which I think we all want that, we will see enormous demand for public-private finance program services to support all these companies that are interested. The biggest concern, I think common concern across all these sites, is that the level of capacity from the existing federal-funded service providers will not be in place because of the fiscal constraints our country is in. We are all trying to do more with less. But I think between support for SBA funding, support and reauthorization, if you will, of the Ex-Im Bank, staffing and support for the domestic commercial services and the foreign commercial services, because the sense is all of them are understaffed at this moment to meet demand, even support for universities who support international trade like the cyber programs, those are all being cut. So while we have a national goal, the irony is we have a goal of doubling exports, but we have an infrastructure that may not be ready to deal with that inflow. What do you say to all the folks outside the Beltway about the extent to which the federal infrastructure for supporting exports will be there to support this increased demand?
I'll throw one thing. I mean, and Amy mentioned, we are still working to be reauthorized. Our authorization to operate as an agency sunsets. It sunset last September. It's been moved down the road, and now will sunset May 31st. So we obviously need to get that done in order to be able to continue operating. But we're making progress, and we've got a vocal minority that's opposed to us, but we're going to work to find some compromise. But because Ex-Im Bank is self-funding, the fact is that we operate at no subsidy from the taxpayer. We actually collect a fee for our work, pays for all of our administrative costs, pays for all of our loan loss reserves, and actually, and on top of that, generates an odd word for Washington, but actually a profit. We actually have returned. We've generated $2 billion to the taxpayer in the last 5 years, above and beyond the loans we make. So, assuming we're reauthorized and our budget is intact, those two. But in terms of the loan volume, we're on a self-funding basis, so we can continue. And Congress rightly has a 20% targeted mandate on small business loans. We actually fell short last year. Our our loan volume for small business grew 70% in 3 years. Very good. The problem is our large volume grew over 100%. So we're self-funding. So the self-funding does help that quotient that we're out there in each of these cities.
Listen, we'll just go down the line.
Sure. I would say the following, actually, is that, and I'm glad you mentioned the mayors. It's absolutely crucial you have mayors involved and have buy-in to the Metropolitan Export Initiative. Mayor Adams has been doing a tremendous job in Portland on this effort as well. Having worked for a mayor before, I mean, these are really the chief executives of the regional economies, and it takes that leadership. The SBA chairs the Small Business Working Group of the Trade Promotion Coordinating Committee, and we have essentially four pillars of operation: identify, prepare, connect, and support. That piece about identifying is a really key area that metropolitan economies can really help. They're the ones who know the businesses, who are aligned with the chambers, who really can find those manufacturers or those new companies that have yet to consider exporting, but that could get them into the pipeline of both the Commerce Department, Ex-Im Bank, and the SBA as well. The SBA has worked with our partners here in a number of different cities around the country on what we call export outreach teams. And this is a kernel of basically alignment with our priorities and the priorities on the ground as well to ensure that there is a good complementary relationship and there's a good referral network as well. And I think that as the MEIs grow with the mayors and their leadership, and the more that we're doing more of that, I think that we'll find that even if we do have scarce resources in the next few years, that we'll be able to use those multipliers to make the National Export Initiative a complete success.
That's great.
Well, before I talk about what the International Trade Administration is doing to make sure we're still doing everything we're supposed to do to help small businesses and communities, I just have to put in a plug for Ex-Im Bank and underscore how important this tool is. Now, neither Fred nor I can tell you to lobby the Congress. We're prohibited by law from doing that.
So you're not doing that.
So I'm not doing that. I'm not asking you to do that. But I will tell you this. If you really care about increasing exports in your community, you need this tool. Your community needs this tool. Your businesses need this tool. I can't for the life of me understand why this has been such a long-raging debate. But I would encourage all of you who care about this to communicate this broadly, and that's all I'll say. With regard to resources, once again, President Obama has put money where he has publicly stated his priorities are. He's been very clear about the importance of promoting exports as a critical part of the economic recovery and the ongoing economic growth of the United States. So again, in this year's budget, he increases the International Trade Administration's budget by $68 plus million. Included in that budget is increasing the number of trade specialists that we have in our international network by 90. So it's not an insignificant amount. So that's one thing that we're doing. Second thing we're doing is we are taking technology to the levels it should be. We have a website, export.gov, which is a state-of-the-art circa 2003 website. But come July 1, it's going to be a state-of-the-art 2013 website. And it's going to be very important that we work closely with the communities to make sure this is being responsive to you and your constituents, so much so that I asked the guy who's really making sure this happens, and I say this in front of him every time to make sure we make our date. Rand, would you stand up? Because I want everybody to know you. Rand is doing an unbelievable job to make sure that we have technology that helps small businesses and also help us do our job. If our technology can provide information that frees us up to do other things to help small businesses, it goes a long way. And finally, the third thing I'll mention, and really what we're doing here today underscores that, is embedded in our long-term strategy at the International Trade Administration is partnerships, but really institutionalizing partnerships and doing that in particular with local communities. The idea Amy mentioned in her opening remarks that our national export strategy includes localizing the National Export Initiative. That is not just a sentence in some document that we send to Congress once a year. That is absolutely critical to our strategy. And we're very proud of this relationship we have with Brookings, and we look forward to working with you this year to take this to 25 more communities and beyond.
Great. Thank you. Why don't we open up the floor to questions for our guests? And please introduce yourself when you...
Hi, I'm Natalia Olson. I'm a small business owner, and I also serve on the U.S. Innovation Advisory Board. My question here is, we had Inficom, the company, on the panel that was there before, and he really talked about the fact that he and other companies would be willing to bring on board and show other SMEs the international markets and help them export. But, you know, at the same time, they would like to see more tax credits or some kind of regulatory process to, you know, just get a lot better. Where do you see that happening? I mean, what type of tax credits do you foresee that could actually help this type of public-private partnership? Because then we wouldn't have to use resources. We'd have to depend on the larger corporations to go ahead and help SMEs be more capable for exporting, which I haven't seen very much at the local level, which we have to really, you know, improve. So that's my question.
I'm not touching tax policy at all. I mean, that's outside of my lane.
It's outside of my lane as well. I'll touch it a little bit. Only say that the president's been very clear in supporting innovation through tax policy. For us to be globally competitive, we have to be focused on that. I should say that we already do rely on the private sector for advice, fair amount of advice. In some communities, it's stronger than others through our district export councils. District export councils are volunteer groups mostly made up of the private sector, but it includes some economic development organizations, academic professionals, but that are expert in international trade. And they're there to help small businesses that are either new to market, they've only exported a little bit, or completely new to exporting. That's number one. Number two, we have a very vigorous partnership program at the International Trade Administration with corporate partners, and we rely on them to promote financing, for example. We have a couple of financial services. We have express delivery partners who do a whole range of education and support. We're not starting with a blank slate, but clearly there are things that we could do more of. I'm not sure, and I'm going to stick with Fred here. I'm not going to go into tax policy on how we could incent having large corporations help small businesses exporting. But just to say, we already are doing a fair amount and looking to do more.
Let me just throw something. The best incentive, I ran a company for 20 years. The best incentive I needed as a small business owner was to increase sales and increase profits. And if you do that, my grandfather always said, if I'm paying tax, I must be making money. I talked to a small business owner because I read a quote in the newspaper, and I just called him up. His name is Drew Greenblatt. He has a company in Baltimore named Marvell. 25% of their sales, the total company is $4.2 million. Exports are 25% of his sales, manufactured in downtown Baltimore, sells steel shelving, racks, average transaction, $8,000 to $12,000. That's where all his sales growth has come. I mean, he's expecting to go from $4.2 to $6 million this year. So it may not be a tax incentive, but the fact is our economy is growing at 2%, 3%. If you're happy with 2 or 3%, don't export. If you'd like to go a little bit faster, you need to look at outside markets.
I'm just going to make a plug real quick. On that side, you know, we do have a small business advocate in the Small Business Administration that is independent of our body to learn more from where small businesses are facing issues, and tax policy is probably one area that they would welcome some input. The other thing I was going to say is, you know, let's also not forget about indirect exporting as well. And there's opportunities for small businesses to get into the supply chain of larger businesses like a Caterpillar and the other ones. And, you know, EXIM does a great job of this as well. And we have a working capital loan that is also for indirect exporting. And that's an area I think that we should touch a lot more on, just to get more of those companies into the exporting chain as well.
And just to say that that is one of the things that this report does is try to count the benefits of exporting to those supply chain participants. Other questions? The gentleman with the tie.
Thank you. David Lewis of Manchester Trade here in Washington, and congrats both to Brookings and this panel particularly for bringing this to Washington, a New Yorker and a Floridian on both extremes. I think that covers a good portion, and of course Los Angeles.
And a California.
And a California, there you go. One question, 2010, our second trade partner in the Americas, Mexico, became a net importer of energy. We now have a very robust debate in this country on exporting energy, coal, liquid natural gas, oil, and so on. Is there any initiative going on within the discussion of NEI to sort of close the circle on that debate within Congress, administration, private sector, so as we have a clear-cut policy as to where we're going to go and how that's going to be done, particularly given the fact that we now have 100, 200, 50 years, if you don't count that, reserves on various oil, energy products that we can take internationally? Thank you.
Somewhat related to your, I mean, we've exported a number of wind turbines to Oaxaca, Mexico, to Honduras. And interestingly, what the Honduras project just was commissioned last month. When we got that transaction, normally for renewable energy, we look at, is there a feed-in tariff or some kind of local subsidy? I couldn't find in that transaction, and it turns out that in Honduras, wind power was actually the least cost source of energy, cheaper than diesel, cheaper than any other source. So certainly renewable energy is going to be key there. Walmart in Mexico wants to be entirely on renewable energy and off the grid by 2020. So those are some efforts that we're doing in terms of renewable energy. In terms of the larger issue about exporting coal and LNG, I think that's still bubbling up. I'm unaware of any particular formal policy on that at this point.
No, I would just say I think that's still I think that's the perfect description. It's still bubbling up. Having said that, though, as Fred pointed out, this is one of our energy is one of our targeted sectors, and I say it in the broadest sense, whether it's alternative energy, wind and solar, or whether it's traditional oil and gas services. I was in Israel last month supporting a trade mission from New Orleans that was largely focused on oil and gas services. I was in India recently in a port facilities trade mission, and related to that were companies that provide services to the energy business. So it's a great opportunity, and I think there's still a lot of debate, as you well have pointed out, on the export of whether it's natural gas or coal.
Great. Why don't we take two more questions? Take these two, and then why don't we ask them at the same time, and we'll address them both.
My name's Tim Wright. I work in Congressman Rangel's office up on the Hill, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on the impact that Russia joining the WTO might have over the next several years.
Great. And let's take the other question here.
Yeah, thank you. Jim Berger from Washington Trade Daily. Apologies in advance to the question for Mrs. Sanchez. But you mentioned it's a question about the fight for limited resources. The president just recently made a big deal out of enforcement of U.S. rights overseas, unfair trade practices, and he attached some money to that. Is that extra, I think it's $24 million, is that part of the $68 million increase for ITA? And also, I guess more psychologically, is that going to have an impact on your foreign commercial people, and particularly the State Department and people overseas, that they now have to turn their attention to investigating unfair trade practices rather than helping U.S. companies export?
So let me answer the first question. No, it will not impact our trade specialists because they're not expert in investigating unfair trade practices, so they're going to continue to focus on helping businesses export. So, no, it will not impact that. Yes, part of the $68 million goes to trade enforcement. The president's been very clear. He is a strong proponent of making sure that U.S. businesses are participating in the global economy, The NEI is a big part of that. Select USA, which we really haven't had a chance to talk about here, which is a program that includes, in part, attracting foreign direct investment in the United States. He's also been very clear that we are going to be vigorous enforcers of our trade laws, that we're going to make sure we do everything to have a level playing field within the United States. And so when a country doesn't play by the rules, when they dump, when a company is enjoying subsidies that put our companies at an unfair advantage within our own domestic market, we're going to vigorously enforce those laws. We're going to vigorously enforce our trade agreements. One of the great advantages of a rules-based trading system and free trade agreements is that it sets the rules so that everybody has a fair shot. And when we don't play by those rules, we're going to put a spotlight on it, and we're going to enforce those agreements as well. And that's what's behind the president's both resources and focus on trade law enforcement.
Do you want to answer the question about Russia?
Sure. Happy.
While you have the mic, and then I'll...
I believe that it will have a positive impact for U.S. businesses. Right now, Russia isn't subject to WTO rules, and I would say that we need to do everything we can to promote PNTR with Russia, as well as the removal of Jackson Vanik. And if we don't do that, what will happen is Russia will accede to the WTO. Countries around the world will be able to take full advantages of Russia's having to play by the WTO rules, and we won't. So I think it'll be positive for U.S. business, but we have to act as well.
Any other comments?
I just want to say I've worked with Congressman Rangel before in his office in the Ways and Means Committee 12 years ago, working on getting China into the WTO. And for a small business perspective, it's absolutely crucial for exporters, especially small businesses, if they're going to do business with Russia, that they are part of the WTO. It's precisely because of what Undersecretary Sanchez mentioned on the protection, whether it's IP protection or the rule of law enforcement as well.
Do each of you want to make any closing, offer some closing thoughts before we wrap up?
Why don't I just very quickly reiterate, partnerships with local communities are central to our strategy. The International Trade Administration, through the Department of Commerce, looks forward to working with communities around the country to localizing the National Export Initiative and not only doubling exports by 2014, but looking beyond to make this a critical component of your local economies and certainly a critical component of our national economy.
Great. Well said.
From the SBA point of view, you know, as we work with the STEP grant, there's STEP recipients and the small businesses. I mean, we look forward to in the next round of STEP to having them partner more with communities as well and to see the output and the increase of the multipliers as well.
Great.
I would just add that I think in this environment, I see very intense competition globally, intense, and American companies are increasingly competing against other countries, not only other companies. And I'm hopeful we are reauthorized because the efforts the President has put here is to try and level that playing field. I said to Bruce this morning, some of our foreign governments give their companies a giant bear hug in helping them, and we give them a mother-in-law's kiss.
I'm going to close by taking a line out of the Greater MSP Export Plan, which is one of their strategies is that they want to solidify their export team to unify all the fragmented programs that are out there in support of companies. Well, I think that this administration has put together a really solid export team. So please thank Chairman Hochberg, Dario, and Undersecretary Sanchez for the time. And thank you for all of you for being part of our program this morning.